Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDooling. I'm here today with John Purcell, and we are very excited to be talking with Sylvia Kolucka about your new book, Live, Laugh, Bake.
Love, Laugh, Bake.
Oh my gosh, I got the name right and I got the title of the book.
We've just finished signing about 300 copies, surely.
Oh my god, I'm so embarrassed.
No, that's funny, because, it could be called Live, Laugh and Bake.
But it is called Love,
It is called Love, but it's an honest mistake.
I think you're concentrating so well on getting that.
I wanted to get the pronunciation of your last name correct.
That's fine.
I focused in the wrong area. But yes, please tell us about your beautiful new book.
Well, as the title might suggest, it is a baking book. And I suppose it's the book that I've always had in my mind, the one that I always wanted to write. And I'm glad I actually waited until I did so, because baking is something that you keep on learning about. And I think I'm now at a point where I can share some of the knowledge, but the knowledge is not finished being acquired. I mean, it's a very long-lasting project. But for now, I've managed to put about 120 recipes into this book and divide them up into several categories, you know, from sweets to savouries, gluten-free, vegan, but also levels of difficulties. So these recipes will suit the person that is terrified of baking, and there's a lot of people like that.
I'm one of those.
I often get approached by, and they say, I'd love to make the breads that you post on Instagram and stuff, but I'm terrified of baking bread. I can't do that. And there are so many recipes in the book that are perfect for those bakers that don't have the confidence, but we'll get the results with some little tweaking of recipes and beautiful, beautiful tasting and looking breads. And then there's the recipes for the geeks like me who don't mind a little bit of science experiments mixed in with the method and ingredients, and creating your own sourdough starter using sultanas that you ferment for a few days.
Wow. Well, we've all been salivating over the book.
Thank you.
Gorgeous. The food in it looks amazing. What really attracts me though is the idea that I think there's this perception that Italian food is kind of very rich and carb heavy and like a treat that you only have now and then. But in your book, you're kind of overturning that and saying that it's everyday.
Yeah, and bread is for every day. Although this is not just a baking book. Obviously, there are recipes in the book that are sometimes recipe, sometimes food, you know, special occasions. You don't have a pavlova every day, sadly. But when you do, just smash it, enjoy it. You know, yeah. If you have it once, I think I probably have it once a year. I have a pavlova for Christmas, or maybe twice a year. You know what I mean? But then when you do, just do it properly and enjoy it without the guilt or the regrets, because
life's too short.
That's pointless. But I've got three kids, and we go through so much bread, obviously, you know, lunch boxes and toasties after school, and their friends come over and they're always hungry. And it's just such a beautiful thing to be able to provide for them, because obviously when you are baking it, you're in control of the ingredients and you can source, you know, really good, you know, stone ground flours that have got all the nutrients, and then you can load them with extra nutrients your kids won't even know about, like seeds and nuts and stuff like that. And it just, there's no matter how wonderful your bakery is, the bread that you make at home is always going to be better because it's freshly baked. And unless you go to the bakery and you buy the bread that has come out of the oven 1 hour before, you're never going to get that same joy. Basically. Plus, so, it's so much cheaper to bake your own.
So every afternoon, is there like half the school at your house? Like, yeah. She's baking again. Then there's this rush down the street to get to your house.
Well, it's funny because I had, Rafi had a sleepover with a couple of friends over the weekend, and they just kept asking for more and more bread. So I had to actually smash a quick loaf while they were there, like a fast rising one, because I knew that I was not going to, keep them satisfied throughout the weekend.
Yeah.
And in fact, what I did, just to add a little bit of nutrition and quality stuff, I added some turmeric to the dough, and not only the bread looked yellow and very pretty, but it just tasted really good.
Oh,
yeah.
And that was just off the cuff.
Yeah, just because I thought I got half a loaf left and three hungry, you know, 11-year-old boys. So I just had to whip up another one.
Yeah, we're talking about Sarah's joy to find food in there that's been celebrated that you can have every day. I mean, when I was in Italy and I had at the time I had an Italian girlfriend, she came out to Australia and she looked at us as a country of warriors. Yeah, she was like, "What is this country? Everyone's worrying about everything they eat." And
exactly.
And she was saying, "You remember when you were in Italy and Zia and Nonna would just, whenever I walked in the door, this food would just
be just mad." Feed you.
Yeah. And I was big, so they were like, just kept feeding me. And
Mangia. Yeah, yeah.
And there was absolutely, and Italian streets are filled with healthy looking people. They're not filled with, you know, you'd think, having a look at your book and going, "Oh my God, we can eat this every day."
It looks sinful.
But the thing is, it's not like you're eating all of those things every day. You know?
I could try.
You could try.
I'd love to try.
You pick the one and then you are sharing it.
Yeah.
Because that's the other thing, that sometimes I love baking a loaf of bread, and if I'm invited to someone's house for lunch, I'll just bring that. Mm. It's quite a wonderful gift to present anyway.
And so there are 120 recipes in there. How many of those would you say, because I know that you talk about learning a lot from your mother and grandmother, are they mostly sort of family recipes that you've tweaked? Or?
No, not really. Mum and my grandma, and both my grandmas, Mum is not, I mean, she's got into baking more recently, I think, because of me.
Mm.
So I think baking was always just my secret, you know, extra passion when it came to, you know, food and the food culture. And so I think I've developed this particular addiction on my own. So, yeah. Well done.
Where in Italy were you raised?
I was born and raised in Milan.
Right.
Well, you know, you walk into a bakery and you walk out of there with a gargantuan sourdough and you've spent €1. So, you know, you come to Australia and you walk out of a bakery with a gargantuan sourdough and you spent $8. It really stings. I couldn't cope, to be honest. It's like, I understand why it is so expensive here. I'm not saying that bakeries are doing a bad thing. It's expensive to source really good flours.
Mm.
And it is time consuming to create beautiful sourdoughs, because they have to rise for at least 24 hours, and therefore you have to pay wages to a lot of people that work very hard, and so I understand exactly where the money is going. Having said that, if I can make it at home, then I'll just do that.
Yeah. You know? So Milan is a very cosmopolitan modern city.
Yeah.
And for anyone who gets off that train station, some people go, "Oh," but when you take a look around, there are, every corner there's a small bakery, there's a home bakery, and there are secret restaurants.
Absolutely.
Yeah, unless you're a local, you don't know about.
Yeah.
What was the food culture in your early life like? Is this a continuation, or is it something, as you said, you sort of half discovered it yourself?
Well, the thing is, I think when you grow up Italian in Italy, I think you take the beauty of our culinary tradition a bit for granted. It's like, you know, it's like speaking Italian. You don't think about it, you just speak the language. And then, you know, you go overseas and everybody says, "Oh, Italian is such a lovely language." And you're like, "Is it?" Okay, I guess so. And I guess, you know, then maybe you learn other languages and then you have that realization that, "Oh, French is such a beautiful language." And then you realize, well, maybe the French people, I mean, oh, actually, they probably think that it's pretty awesome. Wrong example, but what I'm saying is that if it's in your life all the time and it's the way you've been brought up, you don't think of it as something as extraordinary.
Mm.
And in fact, I think as a child and as I was growing up, I was always attracted by other countries and their cultures, thinking that there was so much, you know, more interesting and better.
Yeah.
And other languages sounding, you know, a lot more exotic. And I think it was only after I moved away from Italy that I started missing it so much.
Did you travel much in Italy before you went away?
I did, because, I am an actress and an opera singer. Before I entered the food world, that was my main occupation, I suppose. And so I used to tour with shows, either theatre shows or musical theatre or operas, all over Italy. So I've been absolutely everywhere. But again, as a young woman in my early 20s, you know, traveling for work and touring Italy. So you do a show, two shows in Milan, and then the next day you do two shows in Bologna, two shows in Parma. And you think that your life is so hard. Because, oh my God, I have to catch another train and I have to go to this place. And, you know, this place is like Assisi. And if I think of it now, I feel like I was such a moron. I used to spend all my days in the really terrible cheap hotel room I could rent and just show up at the theater at night, and so now I'm thinking, ah! I'm rediscovering Italy through the prism of, I think, of a tourist these days, and I have so much more love for it, hence I think my reconnection with the food culture and then this new career that has begun 8 years ago.
How surprising was that? Was that, I mean, you're an actress and an opera singer. And how did the food thing happen? Like, how did it actually become a career?
That was a bit of a surprise that it became a career, because when I moved to Australia, so many people kept saying to me, "Oh my God, your food is so amazing, and you need to write a book." And I used to think, my food is so not amazing. I mean, I do Italian home cooking, you know. My neighbor in Italy would cook better than me. I'd never think that it was that amazing. I mean, I knew I was a good home cook, but I'd never thought that home cooking, I suppose, was afforded such status. And then I just started a food blog when Miro, my second boy, was a baby, because, you know, Rafi used to go to daycare a few days a week, and Miro was a really good baby, and I was just getting a bit bored. It was at a time when, you know, I just stopped doing other things because I wanted to, you know, enjoy the baby, but I was itching for something else, and so my mum suggested to do a blog. She said, "Everybody's got a blog, why don't you have a blog?" I don't even know what's a blog. So honestly, I just Googled how to start a blog, and I did it, and I was not prepared for it to become popular so quickly, because it was within 6 months I had, I remember there was a week I had three book offers with separate publishers, and I remember emailing my current agent, Pippa at Curtis Brown, just finding, you know, literary agent on Google, because I had knew nothing. And I found Curtis Brown, and I sent her this email saying, "Help, I've got three book offers, I don't know what to do." She got back fairly quickly.
That must be the easiest one ever.
"Maybe we need to meet."
What an amazing problem to have.
So that's how it all started, and then after the first book, there was, you know, I was able to pitch an idea for a TV show and produce a TV show with SBS, and then one with the ABC, and now I've got my own YouTube channel and a new show coming out soon, and this is just trying to get. This is book number four, so it's well and truly a career, and all collaborations with magazines, and it's what I love about it is that it's just as creative as, you know, singing or acting, but you're in control of pretty much everything, which you're not when you're a performer. You're at the, you know, at the mercy of the director or the composer or the conductor.
So this is like being all of those things.
Pretty much.
That's right. When you're writing a book, it's your idea. You're all the bits.
Yeah, exactly. It's quite amazing to work. To do a book with Pan Macmillan, because they just give you most incredible freedom, and I think that's all that an author could ask for, just to be allowed to express their voice and their ideas and their concept so freely. And they do help you, obviously. They don't just say, you know, you're on your own and this is the delivery date for the manuscript. They're there all the time, but in terms of, you know, the core ideas and the sentiment of a book, they just leave you to develop your own line that you want to share.
Mm. Do you have a favorite recipe in the book, or is that too hard of a question?
It's a bit hard. I don't know. But...
A highlight reel?
Okay, the one that I make more often, apart from the bread, obviously, is the pizza recipe, because I think if we didn't have pizza night every Friday or Saturday, there'd be a revolution in that house. And I'm not prepared to face that because I'm outnumbered now. It's just a beautiful crust.
Mm.
And it's one of those recipes where the crust is everything. The topping is like whatever. Just be really prudent with it. Don't add too much because you really want to taste the crust.
Where's the crust from? Because when traveling around Italy...
It's sort of a Neapolitan style, right, okay. So it's slow fermented.
Yeah.
And so you get like a nice puffy rim, but then you get a crispy bite as well. And I don't know, because of the fermentation, you get all these little air pockets within the crust, and you just know that it's actually good for you because it's fermented. It's quite amazing how much I have to make to keep the family happy. In fact, we had pizza night a few nights ago, and Rafi recommended that I make a lot, because apparently the last time we had pizza night wasn't quite enough.
Oh my god!
You want leftovers in for the morning?
No, there were no leftovers.
No, but you want? I'd be putting in a little petition at this point, saying that was good. I liked your work,
but
if we could have some leftovers, that would be perfect for next morning.
In lunch boxes.
Yeah,
true.
With Italy, you drive 20 kilometers in one direction, and you get a different cuisine.
Mm.
How do you cope with all that sort of difference? Because you probably have people writing in saying, you do it that way? That's insane.
It's quite exciting though, because sometimes, you know, you hear of a recipe, like a name of a recipe, and you're like, I've never tasted that. And then it's presented in front of you and like, oh no, I have to, it's just, we call it something else and we don't add this and we put this instead, or something like a little regional variations according to what is grown in the region. I mean, it's quite nice how in Italy it's still all about seasonality and regionality. You know, you don't find many rice dishes in the south of Italy because they don't grow rice over there. So, I mean, they'll still make a risotto, but I wouldn't order risotto in Naples.
When did you come to Australia? How long ago was it?
I've been a citizen for 3 years, and I think I've been here permanently since 2009.
What changes have you seen? Because I think there's been quite a lot of changes in the availability of different foods.
Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's a good question, because I remember actually the first times I used to come here just on holiday. We used to live in London, and because my husband is Australian, we'd come here for the holidays and stay for like extended periods of time. But I was always like a tourist. I was here on either a tourist visa or a spouse visa. And then, I remember, you know, going to, you know, the stores and not finding anything that I wanted. And then some people recommended like these little delis in, you know, areas where Italians tend to congregate more and live. And I remember having this really hilarious conversation with the man behind the counter. And when he realized that I was fully Italian, because I don't think that he would have let me in on the secret otherwise, he realized I was fully, you know, born and bred Italian. And he said, okay, we have an arrival of burrata in 2 weeks. It was illegal. Like, it was completely illegal. It was, how did they import? I think they had them stuffed up in boxes that had books in them. And so I'm not going to say what the name of the establishment here, because I'm going to get them in so much trouble. But this was a long time ago anyway. But I remember then giving him my phone number, and then a few weeks later he calls to say, the books have arrived. And I drove back to the deli and the books had arrived indeed. Well, these days you find burrata everywhere, and everybody's putting burrata on everything. And I, actually, a little word of advice, it's Not again, not everything needs burrata. You definitely don't want burrata on pizza because it leaches out all the milk. It's like, no, no, that's a big no-no. But, you know, it's like, yeah, it's the new kale.
But did you find, my Italian girlfriend, when she came out in Sava, she came out to Australia and she was talking to the, because I went to Leica, because she's like, I need to find some food. I can't eat. This is back in the early 90s. She's like, I can't eat anything. Oh, that would have been hard. And even trying to find, she used to love those balls of mozzarella that you could slice up and have with tomato, but she just couldn't get any.
You could only find like the dried ones.
Yeah, just a horrible thing. Yeah. And so we went there and she came out going, who are these people? Like, it's like they've been in a time machine.
It is a bit. Like, I find that sometimes those places are sort of stuck in 1950s,
yeah.
Italy in a different country. But I find there's something really beautiful in that, and I wouldn't want that to change. I love the time machine that sort of those suburbs bring, and it's you know, what those people did, you know, migrating to Australia and creating a love for a food that was foreign and looked upon as weird is extraordinary. And whatever steps they had to make it a bit more palatable for a generation of people that had been brought up on meat and three veg and were not exposed to that food, whatever steps they had to make, I applaud them because
I thank them from the bottom.
Exactly.
Yeah, I was very grateful. Raised in the 70s,
so if that means that food. Some restaurants will have cream in their carbonara, that's fine, you know, and because of all the other things that those establishments have brought to this country. So, you know, good for them.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for coming.
It's been such a pleasure to talk
thank you.
To you.
We've got a little look into other areas. I like it. Thank you so much.
And podcast listeners, you can get Sylvia's new book, Love, Laugh, Bake, online now at Booktopia.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. Don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.